And then in 2011, I purchased the company that I own now, which is called Power Sports of Palm Beach. It was actually a Harley guy. He built choppers, but he had a really nice location right kind of in my neighborhood, like right where I wanted to be. And I was like, well, I just want it for the location. So I ended up paying him $6,000 for the LLC, the lease. And he really didn't have anything but some tools and lifts, you know, nothing crazy. But I gave him $6,000 for the name in 2011. We were in that store for probably till 14. Then we moved into our current facility at 14. And by the way, at 14, it was still me and like two guys, you know, I wasn't paying taxes the way I should. I didn't do business the correct way. I didn't know what I was doing. I was a drug addict, dropped out of high school, who liked motorcycles and, you know, knew how to hustle a little bit. So, you know, that being said, we kept moving and kept growing a little here, a little there. And then the defining year for us was 2016, where it was me and two other mechanics, and we just worked on people's bikes and did parts and stuff. And in 16 is when we started to sell motorcycles legitimately, had a dealer license, you know, had no idea what I was doing, had no idea about financing, had no idea about auction, sourcing, data, DMS, nothing. I knew literally nothing. So we jumped in at 2 feet. I hired another person. So it was four of us. For 2016, we sold 85 motorcycles and we tripled revenue. We did $350,000 in 15, and we did almost $1 million in 2016 from selling bikes. So, you know, last year, basically we've done $7 million in revenue over the last 2 years. And then this year was going to be a little different because we brought in a new manufacturer. But all that being said, I've learned how to figure it out. I've learned a lot of stuff from a lot of great people. And I just try to keep implementing certain things that I think are going to be good and work. And I'm not afraid to do new stuff. So, you know, I think that because of that and just the drive to make things better and make this industry better, I feel like that is what has, you know, made us so much different than everybody else out there.
Talking to Tony Mamone from 561 Power Sports, or Power Sports Palm Beach, and got an interesting story here. We were covering a little bit of his upbringing with graduating MMI, starting his own mechanics business out of a little 30 by 30 building in the back of his dad's house, little shed, little building back there. He's got a little history in not only racing, but also sponsoring and helping some young aspiring racers. Kind of propel them forward, support them. And then we wanted to talk a little bit about, let's speed it up to now, right? We've got this Power Sports of Palm Beach. You purchased it from an ex-Harley guy, kind of build some custom choppers. And, you know, you really wanted it for the location because that's the hometown. It's right where you wanted to be, right where you want to operate a business. So you got a unique business. Why don't you tell us a little bit of the history of your shop now? Started out as a mechanic only, and then you started to sell within this dealership and you got a couple franchises. Why don't you take us through the lineage of your shop now?
Okay. So we purchased the actual name Power Sports of Palm Beach in 2011. We just grew it as a mechanic service facility, working on people's stuff. You know, parts, never sold bikes, never had a dealer license until about 2016. So business was started in 04, changed the name in 2011, started a dealership in 2016. From 16, we went from basically knowing absolutely nothing, how to sell bikes, how to buy bikes, how to finance bikes, how to register bikes, how to do anything like that. And now we've grown to a multi-line franchise dealership with a huge pre-owned program, because that's what we started with, would be pre-owned in 2016. We picked up Aprilia, Piaggio, Vespa, and Moto Guzzi the beginning of this year, or a little late last year, which was a good thing because the inventory is getting a little bit harder to get. So with the new manufacturers, there's a little bit of, inventory that just gets dropped off at your door, which is super cool. We've done a lot. We've grown. We've just, every year has been a progression of more sales, more staff, more process, more ingenuity, more marketing, more pretty much everything, because we just continue to grow every year.
So tell us how, 2016, you got these franchises. How difficult was it to not only apply, but get rewarded these franchises in your area and then start, this new line of these Italian bikes? And why did you pick those franchises to go with?
Well, let me back up. So in 16, we did pre-owned units from 16 to basically the end of 22.
Got it.
So that's all we did was pre-owned.
So you're only a year in as a new franchise.
We're only a year in as a new franchise, six, eight months, if that.
Okay.
So, we had Envy Augusta as a franchise back in like 18, but I don't consider them a franchise. They actually just shut the company down. I got a letter in the mail the other day, whatever. Hopefully KTM can do something with them guys. But anyways, so that wasn't a real manufacturer as far as we were concerned. Forget about them. But a Piaggio Group is a real manufacturer. There's real bikes, there's real people, there's real staff. They have a network. It's a good product. In South Florida, Vespas, we just figured it was a win-win. So, we basically took that leap into the spending of $50,000 or $60,000 or $80,000 or $100,000 and putting all this nonsense in your shop that they think you need to sell motorcycles and make your shop look a certain way and this and that, whatever, which I've never been a fan of, but I figured it was time. I bit the bullet. I did it. And at the end of the day, I was happy about it. Obviously, I'm sitting in our picture room right now that we do our photos in. That was just another little thing of the addition that we did when we brought on the bikes, because we believe pictures are important. We believe that the look of the bike, the lighting, the background, the feel of the picture is important. So again, that was just something we were able to do. The pre-owned stuff from 16 to 22 was basically just me buying motorcycles. And if we got a trade here and there, somebody walked in off the street, but 95% of the units were curated and handpicked by me for however long that was, 5 or 6 years.
That's great. That's great. And what was your typical, acquisition source? Were you going out on Craigslist, on, I guess, Marketplace, if that was a thing back in when you were doing it? How would you acquire these bikes?
So I have a little knack for talking to people. So I source my inventory basically the every way everybody else sources the inventory. We would use the auction. We would use buying off the street, which is kind of like my mantra. I have a little thing called I'm a bike hunter is what I do. Is like I hunt motorcycles. Some people hunt big game. It's the same thing. When you shoot a deer and you're walking up on it, when you got a guy that's going to close a deal for something that you're going to make a bunch of money on, or it's the same feeling, right? You just don't get to eat it. You just get to make money on it, but same feeling. So I'm very much in tune with how people sell. I mean, I don't know if you've had to sell some on the internet lately, but it's a freaking nightmare. Do you want 100 people calling you coming to your house? Just take a little less money, dude, and sell it to me. It's easy. Yeah. It's easy, right? So I make it easy for them. I get all the obstacles out of their way, whether it's a payoff, whether this or that, where they want to trade it in. And every time I communicate to somebody about buying their motorcycle, depending on where they are, I'm always throwing the trade in, here's the shop, or here's this, or here's that, and kind of continuing to build a network around 561 Power Sports. I get people to leave me reviews about buying their bikes, because that's important to me. I want somebody to say, oh, Tony came to my house. He was honest, whatever. So I ask people for reviews all the time. So that's basically my main source, because I'm extremely good at that. And other than that, that's basically auction, trade in, buying off the street. And that's pretty much it.
That's great, man. How many street buys do you think are the percentage of your overall inventory?
Probably 70. I know that sounds high, but probably 70. 70 of the used, 70% of the used, obviously the new is the new. So,
right.
But it's getting tougher and tougher and tougher. And we're having to pay up, you know, for bikes on the street. I just went and picked up a 22 Gixxer 1000R anniversary with 1500 miles on it. You know, at auction, that bike's going to bring 16, high 16s, if not 17,000. And I bought it for 15, which is $800 above clean book. I can't buy that bike at auction for that. There's still a $2,000 spread on a bike that's pretty much unavailable. So to me, there's money in there. So I went and I drove, you know, 2 hours there, 2 hours back to get it. And that's just some of the things that we have to do. I really, really should, you know, video capture my travels, because there's a lot of people out there making money buying bikes on the street, and they're terrible. I mean, they're terrible, dude. If you followed me around with the video camera, we would be going viral all day long. Anyways, because I close probably 20, 25 deals a month on the street. I'm at 25 people's house, in their house, having them sign paperwork, taking their water, petting their dog, saying hi to their kids, whatever, you know, and it's a lot of fun because it's an interaction. I'm all about relationship and community. I really love that stuff. So I really like, you know, buying people's bikes off the street, you know.
That's great. And so, you know, for the dealership Fix-It fans that are listening to this, what's one way that they can get started with this process that you've just perfected over the couple of years, right? Let's say that they're in Kansas or they're in California or Oregon or Washington or New Jersey, and they're listening to this and they go, man, I'd love to pick up, you know, I'd love to pick up 25 used bikes a month. Maybe they're not a dealer principal, maybe they're not, but you know, how far do you travel? What kind of sites are you looking at? And then what kind of reach, you know, what kind of communication do you have with these customers to kind of get this ball started?
So I'll tell you, I'll try to put all that together. We might have to go back and ask another question. Okay. But so the first thing is you have to have somebody that knows motorcycles in and out and is able to be trustworthy with buying. I mean, you got to have a buyer, somebody. It's complicated. Not just everybody can just do what I do, because even if you know motorcycles real well, doesn't mean you can talk somebody out of their, you know. I mean, I've literally showed up at people's house that's owed 30 grand on their Harley. They've given me $10,000 cash or whatever. I've had them sign some paperwork. I've taken their bike and their $10,000 and I'm out. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's happened probably 30, 40 times because I'm their source to get away from their problem. And if I can build an element of trust with them, not through text messaging, but through the phone call, which is another point for me. As soon as I'm close to any kind of deal, I need to talk to them. I have to talk to them. I have to close them. I have to get them on the phone. I have to figure them out. I listen to their way they talk, how they do what they do on the phone. Text message, you can't do that. So you got to be a good talker. You have to know every in and out on the payoffs, on the banks. You basically have to get somebody to trust you in a 3 or 4 minute conversation. So that's really what makes me good at what I do. Okay. So if you have that guy, then basically all you have to do is hunt motorcycles. And basically it's the same place as everybody else hunts. The most best place would be Facebook Marketplace. I feel like, you know, at least in our area, we have a big demographic of bikes. The Cycle Trader inventory for pre-owned private sales, the Craigslist for sales, there's really not a lot of stuff on there that our dealership would be looking for, which is like, you know, sport. I only buy clean bikes. We only like to buy mint, cherry bikes that need nothing. We don't like to do anything that's wrecked, damaged, trash, totaled. I mean, we'll change a part out here and there, but we're not trying to buy something that's been slid down the street and fix it. It's just not what we do. So again, depending on the dealership's culture, depending on their sales, depending on what they buy, depending on what is good for them, because I'm only looking for specific stuff for my dealership to retail. So I know what I can buy it for, and I know what I can sell it for. So you got to have all that information when you're buying, but Marketplace has been the best avenue as of late. I will usually only travel two and a half hours for one motorcycle, one way. But you know, depending on how good you are and how savvy you are and how good you are on that phone and how quick you are to respond to people, you could line up two or three deals in one area. You know what I'm saying? But again, you know, you're lining up two or three deals in one area. If you don't get the people to, and this is another point, if you're paying attention here, which I'm sure you are, anybody listening, you got to make them take the ad down. You have to. If it's a deal and you know that you're the first at the plate and you got the guy on lock that, hey, I'm the buyer, take the ad down, give him some money, whatever it takes, because somebody will come behind you and pay more money for that unit than you will. I'll probably use one or two a week like that. I just lost a 2022 CVO Tri-Glide with 1,000 miles on it because the guy wouldn't take the ad down for me. So it's just one of those things, you know. And the other thing is you have to know how to check the VIN number, the mileage, the history within a few minutes of getting a VIN number for the bike. That's another thing that I will never travel without a phone number and a VIN number. Okay. Because if I can't talk to you, oh, I just want to go messenger, fish sticks. I don't want to do that. If I can't talk to you, if I can't text you, I'm not waiting for the internet to go down or whatever. If I can't call you. Without a VIN number, you really have no idea what you're getting into. It could be dude's, you know, brother's bike. Well, your brother's not here. I need a bill of sale with your brother. You know, you could have stole your brother's bike and his title. Now you're selling it to me and it's going to get reported stolen or whatever. So, and I have my paperwork ready. As soon as I get that VIN number, I log into my DMV, I pull all the data, I make my paperwork, and I'm on the road, you know, and I get there. I'm super professional. I hand them my card. My name's Tony Mamone. We talked on the phone, shake their hand, look them in the eye, you know, tell them the truth. You make your deal, you know, you have all the paperwork. I hand them my card. The first thing I do, you know, I'm a professional. This is what I do for a living. I'm not just some joke off the street going to take your bike out and go do wheelies with it down the street. I'm not that guy. I'm a professional. I'm here on a business. I'm not here for anything else. That's it. So, you know, having an efficacy on how you talk, how you buy, how you communicate, and doing what you say. You know, that's another thing that people don't like. If you say, hey, I'm going to come tomorrow and, oh, I can't make it. Well, now if they know you're a dealership, you've just put a bad taste in their mouth from your dealership because, you know, you didn't do what you said. So you always got to do what you say. The other thing too is you got to remember, you got to put yourself in the people selling shoes, right? So especially if there's something out there that's any kind of a deal, they're going to have 50 messages in a day. Okay. Yep. They're going to have 50 messages. So now it's like, my price is too low. I have to vet all these people that are going to come to my house, so on and so forth. So I'll give you a perfect example. There was an R1 60th anniversary posted in Orlando about a month ago. The girl had it posted for 10 grand and it didn't run. So it's a yellow and black bike, gold wheels, beautiful, beautiful machine. Has 7,000 or 8,000 miles on it. I hit her up. I was first at the plate. And then she didn't respond to me because she had 100 different messages. Called me in the morning, or she told me in the morning, oh, I sold it to a guy. It wasn't running, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But I gave him your phone number, because they didn't know if they could fix it. I'm like, all right, whatever. The freaking thing's gone. Well, a month later, kid calls me. Hey man, I bought this bike, this R1. I didn't even know what he was calling for. Like, I don't know this dude, you know? So anyways, dude calls me a month later. I go up there, I scoop the bike. I scooped it. It has a bad rod in it or whatever, but we just throw a brand new crank in there and fix that bike. And we bought it $3,000 or $4,000 under book. But you know, that was a deal that I lost and happened to get again, which never happens. But, you know, you have to be ready to travel at any time during the day or night with cash in your hand and paperwork ready to go and be able to do all of that within a 5 or 10 minute period and be on the road. Because if not, you're not going to be on top. You're going to be wasting your time because you're going to be trying to set something up for Thursday or whatever. And there's five people that'll come right now. So if you ain't that guy, you ain't getting it.
Some good old fashioned salesmanship, some good old fashioned hustling, some good old fashioned hard work is all I hear in that whole statement, Tony.
Yeah, it's pretty much.
So let's talk about your frontline readiness, right? So at this point, you've done all this work to go acquire the bike. You've got it. Now the clock's ticking day one. What type of recon process, what type of picture process do you go through to actually make it sellable and retail ready?
So we, I'm a big process guy. Everything's written out. Everything's kind of developed and redeveloped and reexamined based on any type of issue. So basically we'll develop a process. We rock the process until there's an issue. If the issue interferes in the process, we change the process to make sure the issue never happens again. That's basically how we do it. So the bike, I basically am responsible for purchasing. So I purchase, I come in with my trailer, my staff runs outside, they get the bikes off, they take the trailer out, I go home. That's usually how it is. My staff's amazing. I have an amazing staff, which is another reason why our dealership is so much different than anything else that people are used to, is because we are actually a family. We all talk to each other. We all know what everybody's doing. We all hang out. It's just fun, right? So once I get the units to the store, my team basically comes involved. I come in, I hand in my paperwork. My inventory manager throws it on our Google Sheet, all of our different things that we need. We have the unit, where I bought it from, what day I bought it from, whether it's floored or not, how much I paid for it, the customer, you know, blah, 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 whatever. So that's our Bible for all of our units that we have, with all the information, and the information changes on the Google Sheet based on where the unit is in our process. So if it's just in, it's here. Once it gets detailed and pictured, then the box gets checked off and it goes into inventory. So the Google Sheet follows the process. The people that are in charge of their part of the process have to go in and check off their Google Sheet every time so that everybody's on the same page. Once my inventory manager inputs it into the system, she puts it in our DMS. Once it's in the DMS, I usually tell them either to turn it on or turn it off. And the reason that I specifically choose bikes that we don't, that, and what I mean by that is show publicly or hold on to it for a second. The reason we do that is because if it's an auction bike, I usually let it rip right as soon as I buy it. It's online and available for people to look at with a stock picture. My staff know that if any lead comes in on a bike with a stock picture, that bike may not be here. It may not be out of service yet. They don't know where it is, but we just need the bike there because the clock's ticking on the flooring as soon as I buy it from auction, and there's fees, there's blah, blah, blah. So certain bikes, I have an R1 back here that's mint. I have another one on the floor that is not so mint, still mint, but not so mint. But I'm not putting that bike on the floor until I sell that one, because they're both the same year. And obviously everybody's going to gravitate towards the one that's a little nicer. So you can't, I don't put two bikes of the same exact year or the same exact color on the floor. So that's another reason. So why I would turn on or turn off the destination as soon as I buy the bike. Once the bike comes in, it gets a PDI created in our DMS. All those PDIs are scheduled to our PDI tech based on when the bike comes in. He looks at them, works on them, fixes them, comes back over, brings them back into our holding facility where we hold the motorcycles that I purchase. They get detailed. They come right in here, you know, glamour shots, and then they go to the floor. So once the bike hits the floor, the battery is either new or brand up to charge. The, you know, the brake pads, the tires, everything is at a certain standard that what we have. And then you can basically come in and take any bike on my floor and ride it anywhere you want. The only thing you're going to have to do is put gas in it. We make sure that everything is ride ready, as new as it possibly could be, without getting really crazy on some older stuff. But we've had multiple times, I mean, at least once a month, come in, where are all your new used bikes? You know, I'm like, well, they're all used. Oh, really? Yeah. You know, anyway, so, you know, again, it's, that's basically the process. My team does 95% of it. They're really good at it. They're really good at communicating. We use a Trello board to follow things. I actually used to use an asset tag with all the units, and it would be a check in and check out on who was touching it. That was really cool and fun, but it was another part of the process that was good, but we just weren't ready for it yet, because it just didn't really benefit us greatly. To a dealer that has 400 or 500 bikes in used inventory, it would greatly benefit them. But
do you know your average days to frontline there? Do you track that stuff?
Yes and no. I basically, because I'm at the helm and I kind of know everything that's going on, and we run a short staff or a small staff. I mean, we have 13 people here. again, I'm looking at this, and I try to explain this to people. I'm looking at this from a dealer principal who's a mechanic, who's a buyer, who knows everything about the sales process, finance. So I'm a very different type of dealer principal. So I can manage a lot of different things. I'm not just a sales manager. I'm not just a GM. I'm like everything. I work on bike. I was putting shocks on a bike with my kid today. You know, I do everything around here. So when I talk about certain specifics on how we do things, it's based on that. So most GMs or dealer principals or sales managers can only do what they do. And they can't do what I do because it's so spread apart and there's so many different jobs and so many people have to touch certain things in order for things to happen. For us, it's like, I go to talk to this, boom, do it. Text them, do it. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot simpler. So
that's great. True entrepreneur. He does it all. Love
try
that.
Try not to, but you know, sometimes, you know, it's just fun to do.
Well, let's switch gears to your beautiful studio. So the first time we had spoke, I was just a big admirer of the picture area that you had built, right? Lots of lights, a great branding. Tell me a little bit about why you invested into building this little photo studio and how it's benefited you and your shop in the sales process for online.
So I'm a big research guy, so I'm very always looking at you. If you're around me and you're a dealership and you're doing something, I'm watching. I just watch everybody. I watch, you know, what they do, their websites and this and that. And I kind of just always am taking things in on what people are doing. And you know, the Lightroom is, you know, believe it or not, this thing only cost me about $1,500 to do. It's not expensive. Obviously I did everything myself, but the reason why we wanted to do this is just because nobody was really doing a classy motorcycle picture. I mean, everybody's either in a parking lot out in the woods. I mean, I got a dealer here that takes his pictures in the grass all the time. I don't know how he sells bike, but whatever. I mean, that's, you know, they're in Miami, so whatever. You know, and I never really saw anybody doing things. And I've always been a nice picture guy. I like the, you know, the 360 kind of things and all that kind of different stuff that people would look at that would set set us apart from everybody else. So, yeah. So the room was actually an office, and all we did is just paint it black. I have a turntable that's underneath me that spins the bike. It doesn't do it automatically, which would be sweet, maybe in the next shop, but we'll spin the bike so it stays centered and the pictures are kind of all the same in the same booth. And again, that stuff, that 40 pictures, same exact time, same exact location, same exact look, so that everything is the same. You look at one bike, there's 40. You look at another bike, there's 40. You know, bike's got some aftermarket accessories, there's 44, 45. Pictures sell motorcycles, dude. I mean, like, you know, if you're gonna go buy something and one looks really nice and there's another one that doesn't look so nice, I mean, obviously, what are you gonna do? You know, it's just that's what you're gonna do. You're gonna go gravitate towards the nicest thing. So yeah, man, I mean, that's really, you know, the reason is just to catch people's eye, man, do something different. I mean, you're not going to survive in this business if you do things the same way you did a year ago or 2 years ago or 10 years ago. Some of these guys are so old. Some of these dealer principals have lacked to change and they're going to either sell to somebody big, or they're going to close their doors because, you know, times have changed and times are continuing to change faster than ever.
It's incredible how fast things are changing. Yeah. You got to keep up with it. Well, anybody who knows me, I'm certainly a big advocate of high quality pictures, multiples, different angles, and just having a nice first impression, because that's what counts online, right? When anybody goes out to shop for their next motorcycle, the first thing they're going to do is go on to maybe like a Cycle Trader or Moto Hunt or, you know, a Facebook marketplace. And they're going to look at the wide, broad range of different motorcycles out there that kind of fit what that customer is looking for. And who's going to win that battle of eyeballs? It's going to be the one that puts out the effort into the best presentation of their product. And Tony, you certainly are doing it with how you're putting stuff online. So my hat's off to you. as we kind of round out here, let's talk about something else that's unique with you and your dealership, and that's the speed of sale. So on a conversation you and I had, you got a real unique way of how you move customers through the journey, right? So at this point, a customer has looked at your beautiful inventory online, right? They've picked out something, maybe they've submitted a lead, maybe they've made a phone call, but they're now engaged with your dealership. Now it's time to walk down that buyer journey, right? They come in on an appointment and they hit the door. What is the first thing that happens down to the last thing that happens for when they take that motorcycle home? Walk me through that whole process of financing.
So I know this topic is a little bit different. I've been like asking people about it, doing some research on it. So in high volume areas where, you know, lots of people, lots of sales, lots of things happen, dealerships usually do their sales process, you know, automotive motorcycles, at least down here in South Florida. It takes a little while. You know, you got three or four people that have their hands in your pocket, basically from the get. You know, you either come into the store, you got your salesman, you got your desk guy, you got your finance guy, and then you got the bank. And you know, all these people are trying to make money off you, basically, is what's happening here. And you're okay with that because, you know, that's how things work. But what doesn't really work is the 2 or 3 or 4 hours that people sometimes have to sit at a dealership because they don't have enough staff or whatever the reason may be. I have a couple of reasons why I think they sit there for 3 or 4 hours. But that's kind of the MO here. And you know, one of the reasons why, I don't know if you want me to get into some specifics, not talking about anybody's process in general, but basically my take on it is you walk into the dealership, you're going to meet a salesperson. The salesperson is the lowest person on the totem pole that can make any decisions on what you want. Okay. So that guy is just a means to you getting to the desk into the finance office. So you have to deal with this guy. You got to deal with him. Hopefully his knowledge is good. Most people finally, when they make some kind of decision that they're ready to buy, they're going to sit down at a desk. They're going to fill out a credit app. Possibly they might get a Foursquare. They may get, whatever they get from their salesman. Then you get a finance app. It goes into the desk. You get your sales manager, pulls his credits off, pull real quick, depending on whatever they're using. They say, yo, this guy, I can get him approved. Go back and hit him with this number. They'll sales guy will come back and hit you with your, what they call the first pencil in the hog world. And then if you're okay with that first pencil, basically you're getting your head ripped off when you get in the finance office. That's basically what's happening. You can go 2 or 3 pencils and get a better deal and negotiate, which you think you've negotiated, which you actually haven't, because they told you what you were being for in the beginning, which was not even anywhere close what you're qualified for. So then you commit to a number. Now the bike's okay, we're rolling here. The credit app's approved. Okay, sir, we got to get the bike into the, you know, washed and detailed and all of this stuff. And now you're there for another couple hours. Now the finance manager is prepping to make sure that he can get every dollar out of whatever you've already committed to. Because usually the banks come back with a number. The banks will come back with, hey, he needs $2,000 down and it's $200 a month. Well, your first pencil is probably going to be $3,500 down and $300 a month. The reason they do that, they add that extra money is because if you commit to that number, the finance manager has to find that money in your deal somewhere, whether it's through back-end products, warranty gap, registration, priority maintenance, however the dealer has to get that money out of your pocket through some kind of a product that they're going to sell to you. That's what the finance manager usually does for 30 or 45 minutes, because his main job is to sell you, get that money out of your pocket, or sell you something that he can make money on. Another person that's not necessarily in the best interest of the customer, but that's the way big dealerships are set up. Everybody's on commission. We gotta roll units and make sales, right? Our process is just way different than that. We pride ourselves on you not waiting. We pride ourselves on making a deal quick and getting you back to whatever you wanted to do before you got here. we pride ourselves on, we can get anybody that is remotely set up. So if we need pay stubs, you have your pay stubs or can get them within a few minutes. If you need a driver's license, you should have it on you. If you need a bill or something like that for the bank, if you have, can provide that information, I can get you from credit app to the curb in 30 minutes. One of the things that the reason we do that is because there's no reason for you to wait around in my store. Yes, you can go to the parts to counter and we do all of that. We walk them around, we talk to them, tell them this is the parts manager, this is the service man, blah, blah, blah. We do all of that, but we don't need to do that in a 3 or 4 hour period. We can do that in a 30 minute period because of the process. Now, mind you, if it's busy in the store and there's 5 credit apps and there's 5 people in the store, obviously I can't probably get you done in 30 minutes, but if my guys don't have anybody in the store and you come in from credit app to curb, it's 30 minutes or I'll give you $500.
Oh,
but anyways,
wow. So you guarantee the 30 minutes or $500.
If somebody tests me, I will. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's not a public thing, but if anybody listening to this wants to come buy a motorcycle, come test me. You have my word.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
So as a dealership Fix It podcast, right? Our main audience is other dealership people around the country. And so, not that long ago, I was talking to a Harley principal GM, and, you know, he kind of gave me some stats that the motor company that had given him probably a few years before that, probably pre-pandemic, but he was starting to explain to me that every hour within the buying process for a customer, their profitability goes up, right? And so they, as you said, they do strive to maybe slow down the process a little bit when the customer finally does commit during that negotiation or write-up stage, and they're going through the financing, then they finally make it into the F&I box for the negotiation of all the back-end products, and then the PDI, and then the prep, and then the delivery, right? That could be, yes, a 3-4 hour time for one motorcycle purchase, but the motor company, I think, has given some of these Harley GMs, you know, this go ahead to slow that down and make it as long as possible because it increases the profitability. For your location, your unique standpoint, your unique position in this is to make it even quicker and not, have the customer wait around. How has that affected any of your profitability or has it at all?
So, this might sound a little right or whatever you want to call it. This may sound a little weird, but we actually care more about people than we do about the money in their pocket. So from that stance, selling a bike is profitable. Gaining a customer is profitable. Doing right by somebody is profitable. Establishing a relationship and a trust factor is profitable. It might not be on that day, but I pretty much can guarantee you my customer capture rate and hold rate is better than any Harley store on the planet. Because that's just the way we do it. I understand the big stores, the big sales, the big commissions, the big this, the big money. I get it. You know, and if you want to run the business that way, that's cool. You know what I'm saying? But when you run a business that way, you're not passionate about motorcycles. You're passionate about money. And therefore, the motorcycle business is just, it's okay. I mean, you got the big companies, you got the Rumble-Ons, you got the Varacas, you have all these people that are big, big groups right now. And it's like, yeah, that's fun. It's cool. You know what I'm saying? But motorcycles is about passion. It's about community. It's about an outlet. It's about a lifestyle. It's not about making money. And when people try to turn it into that, you lose that, what is really drawn us all to the motorcycle business and to motorcycles in general. And that's the passion to ride.
And let's not forget why we got into this business in the first place, right?
Right.
That same
exactly.
Passion, enthusiasm. So let's say that, randomly someone is listening to this when we air it and they say, you know what? I want to take a little piece of Tony's process here. I think that I want to improve my customer experience by speeding up the process. What types of things or what types of efficiencies have you put in place or cut out of that process to help speed it up for the customer?
So we have we use, and again, I don't know if you want me to name names, but
Name them.
So we use, we've been using Simple Dealer for a few years now. Okay. And one thing about Simple Dealer is their product is really, really good, but they're trying to get a hold of somebody is next to impossible. So just hope you don't have any problems there. So
let's talk about Simple Dealer real quick for the folks at home, just to explain what that is, right? So this is an online application that replaces your default online application, right? But the difference between the two is that it interacts with a program within the dealership to help fill in some of these submissions, right? So when you fill it out and turn and send it to the banks for approvals, it's already kind of done. There that inefficiency of hand entering everything a second time, a third time, a fourth time for each bank.
Yes.
All that kind of goes by the wayside with this particular product.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons. So in the Harley business, you guys don't need to pay attention to this because you have, you know, Talon and HDFS. So nothing happens to you here. Eagle but Mark, all the baby. Metric guys, all the metric guys, Sheffield, Synchrony, Honda, Cowie, Westlake, blah, blah, your subprimes. Simple Dealer's got about 90% of those banks in there, and it works just like a dealer track if you're familiar with the auto world. Our credit app is tied to Simple Dealer. The credit app is really cool because it's not like a huge page and you're looking at your phone and like, it's one-liners. What's your name? Tony. What's your last name? Mamone. And it's just, it's very simple to people to fill out. Once that credit app is filled out, it creates a Trello card, which gives us an update that say, hey, this guy just filled out an information. And then it goes into Simple Dealer's portal where we just click on the guy, click on the three banks, hit enter. The system opens up our own banks. It logs us in. It auto fills everything and you structure the deal on whatever you want. Hit send. So I can submit to 5 banks in less than a minute. As long as it takes them to structure the deal, put the money in on each app or on each bank and hit enter. That's how long it takes us to submit. Super cool. So, that is one of the things that we use. And again, I have two guys. And you're like, how do you do that with two guys? Well, you know, we do that with two guys. We can do our records like 68 bikes in 1 month with two people. And again, it's all used stuff. That was all used. So, you know, that's a lot of, and I do everything from credit app to delivery, to tag work, to signing all the papers. My guys do everything. They don't just, you know, they sign the contracts. They interact with my guys from the phone call to the sit down, to the leave. They don't deal with anybody else. It's my two guys. That's it. And me potentially, and the service manager, sales manager, but again, they're very good at what they do. You know, our leads are handled pretty fast so that we can get them into the store and get them where they need to go. But
so you got the sales process, you got the technology of Simple Dealer to help with the financing. Okay, now guys approved, right? This is assuming that the negotiation has already taken place, right? Mm-hmm. You've got a write-up back and forth, maybe once, two, three times. Okay, now it's time to start the financing. Now we've got an approval because Simple Dealer helped us to get that approval quicker through one or two or three banks. What happens there? We've got the finance and F&I in, you know, office. We go step in there with the customer. Do you go through a menu process? How many different backend products do you pitch? And how long does that typically take?
So going back for just a second, we price our bikes accordingly to the NADA book value, unless they're a little sought after. Our process is this, is listen. And again, I can make a decision to sell anything at any time to anyone I want based on if I like them or not. So sometimes that happens, very rarely, but sometimes it happens. Sure. But I forgot where I was going.
You're a one price dealer? You don't really negotiate?
So here's the thing in that. Like, we'll negotiate to a point, but we're not negotiating on the phone. Like, hey, what's the best price? Nah, dude, we got a process for your best price shopping, okay? You know, if we can get him in the store, my guy can close him. Like, it's simple for my guys to be able to get and commute. Because when they come in, they come into a beautiful store, people that are greeting them, water in the fridge, everything's clean, people know their name, like, you know, it's just a different thing. So when we get them in here, it's kind of like they're not bombarded by all these, you know what I'm saying, the normal rigmarole of the dealership. They get in, they sit with my guys, and we usually say, listen, dude, we don't negotiate on bikes that are, unless they're 60 days old, because our turn is like 8. So on used. So I flip my eight times a year. Between 5 and 6 times a year is what our turn is. So if we have 100 bikes, we sell 500 or 600. I don't need to make you a deal based on this bike that you want. I mean, if there was another deal out there, and there's not, but you're coming to me for this bike because there's nobody else has it. So therefore it's going to stay where it is. And again, we're not rude with it. We just say, hey, if the bike's not 60 days old, we don't negotiate. And if it's from 60 to 90, we'll negotiate a little. Again, it's like, are they price shopping? Are they looking for a payment? All these different types of things. We just try to figure out right from the get if the person wants to buy. And then the next thing is, are you able to buy? And then once we know if they're able to buy through the credit app and the process, is when are you picking your unit up? Those are the three things that all we need to know. So once we get all of that stuff, it's real simple to just make it very easy for the customer. So again, do we haggle? Do we, you know, we really don't. I mean, motorcycles are at a, you know, especially what we sell, they're very difficult to find. So therefore there's no reason for us to do anything. You know, on an older unit, yeah, we'll do whatever we got to do to get that thing out the door. But, you know, and then as far as, you know, once they get into the office, I mean, most people have bought motorcycles before. If you're financing a bike now, chances are you financed a bike in the past. So for us, people know about the products, most people understand. And again, it's more of a sit down and education process rather than a, how much money can I get out of your pocket? Hey, buddy, you know, this is an Aprilia. It's 2 years old. You really need a warranty on it. This is why. It's $8 a month. And we sell them the product that they need, not necessarily sell them products to make more money. I know that sounds crazy, but again, we go back to like, I really want the customer to have a good experience. And I mean, you wouldn't believe how many people that I talk to that have bought their bikes. Hey, who do you buy it from? X and Y dealer. Hey, how much did you sign for any gap warranty, tire and wheel prepaid maintenance? Yeah, I did. I basically can know, hey, well, do me a favor, call your RPM1 or whoever the company is and ask them to cancel it and see how much money you get back. Hey, I got $1,700 back. Well, now your bike's $1,700 cheaper. So now I'm pissed at the dealer, blah, blah, blah. They did this to me. And I hear that more than I love my back-end products. You know what I'm saying? So like, I get it, but I'm looking for long-term customers and their kids and their families and everybody they know. I don't care about the one transaction. I do, but it's not the big picture of the day.
Your big picture is being hyper-focused on the customer for the long run.
Ever, forever. I want to make customers for life.
I love that. Get them out on the road, get them riding, make them happy, keep them coming back to you.
Exactly.
That's great. That's great. So we do sell some back-end products. Tell me about the post-sale process. What type of follow-up, what type of service do you bring them back in? New or used bike, doesn't matter, but they've now taken delivery of their bike. They're burning gas down the road. What does the post-sale process look like for your store?
So we are actually in development to change kind of how we've done it in the past. So we take a little bit more personal approach. So my guys will call them the next day, 2 weeks later, and then a month later. They try to make a personal connection with them and just see how everything's going. So that's something that the CRM, once the bike's marked sold, it sends the follow-ups to my guys when they have to do it. So that always gets handled. You know, some of the other customers, and a lot of people know who we are and they've been in, they bought multiple bikes, so on and so forth. Most of the people that also buy from us, we probably have about 50% of our business that's local and about the rest of it that's spread off. I mean, we have people fly in. I had a guy fly in from Michigan to buy something the other day. I had a dude fly over from Fort Myers, land his little plane and look at a unit and then fly back over and have it shipped. I mean, it's weird. It's just about the inventory and like people can't get it somewhere, so they just come to us. But the follow-up is basically those three touch points, and then we have a process to where as soon as a year goes by after the bike is, they get an email stating, hey, are you still happy with your bike? These are our new options that we have available if you're looking into trade or so on and so forth. And that's really it. You know, the basic marketing things we send are the newsletters and the other things that happen to kind of stay in front of them. But, you know, and probably 65% of the time we sell somebody a used bike and never see them again until they're ready to buy their new bike again, you know, ready to buy a bike again, you know. They have their own little clique of mechanics, or they work on them stuff themselves, or so on and so forth. So, you know, the people that want to be around are around, you know, the people that, you know, just come in to buy a bike and this, you know, again, we can only do so much for them to get them back in the store, but it's more of a personal approach rather than a spamming email-ish, you know, whatever, you know.
That's awesome, man. And that's what this podcast is all about. The Dealership Fix It is about providing value to dealership personnel to help them succeed within their own dealership. So the last parting words, I'll just ask you, what's the biggest piece of advice or biggest process? What's one thing that someone has told you or taught you that we can share with the audience today?
You know, I really feel that it's just a genuine care about people. You know, it's, you know, that's really what I would leave people with, because people feel that, you know, they can feel whether you care about them or you don't. And again, some people care, some people don't. But for me, I just feel like treating people the way you want to be treated is just the best you can do.
And you're talking about employees, customers,
everybody. It's life. If you want to go through life, you know, looking at the rearview mirror and all the bad things you've done, or you can draw a line in the sand and say, hey, man, I'm going to forgive all this stuff and I'm going to do my thing. And, you know, and like I said, people need people to walk through life with them. I mean, not everybody, you know, has a hunky dory life on Facebook. You know what I'm saying? And some people need people to care about them, because they might not have no other person that cares about them in their life, but their motorcycle service rider. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, it's about relationship. It's about people. It's about that. It's not about money.
That's great, man. Just be a good human, right?
Be a good human, dude.
All right. Well, Tony, I really appreciate you joining us today. And he is Tony Mamone. He's of Power Sports of Palm Beach. You can see him at 561powersports.com. Check him out on LinkedIn. Check him out on YouTube. He's got an Instagram. Go look him up. Look up his shop. He's got a lot of great inventory on his site. Beautiful pictures. Great process for the customers. He's out there in West Palm Beach, Florida. And he's doing it, man. He's doing the whole thing. So appreciate everybody listening today, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Thanks, guys.